The negative impact of alcohol and drug addiction can hardly be underestimated. 85% of people in America's prisons were incarcerated under the influence of alcohol and drugs. Drugs are involved in between half to three-quarters of all incidences of violence, from child abuse to rape to murder. By one estimate, the cost of drug abuse is $400 billion a year. Journalist and author David Sheff struggled to save his son, Nick, from addiction. He recounted that story in the book Beautiful Boy. And in his new book, Clean, Sheff argues that addiction is not a failure of character, but a disease that can be both prevented and cured. David Sheff has written for the New York Times Magazine, Wired, Rolling Stone, and elsewhere. And in Clean, you're not just talking about drugs, you're talking about alcohol. You think it's the same question?
It is the same question as far as I know, as far as the researchers say. Alcohol is just one of many drugs that are abused. In some ways, it's one of the most dangerous.
You write, most drug use isn't about drugs, it's about life. What's that mean?
Well, it means we've been focusing on this problem. That is a serious problem, but we've been focusing on it completely wrong. We tell, certainly when we're trying to prevent drug use among our kids, we're telling them to just say no, and we're telling them, you know, we're scaring them and warning them, and it doesn't work. What I think will work is when we finally recognize the fact that we don't focus on drugs themselves. Instead, we focus on the question of why people use. And it turns out that there's a whole list of risk factors that increase the chances that someone's going to use in the first place and then become addicted. You know, everything from certainly addiction, alcoholism in a family, that's the genetic component is huge. But there's also issues about people who have mental illnesses, depression, anxiety disorder, people with ADHD, attention stuff, and learning disabilities. Poverty is a predictor. You know, neighborhoods, if people are – it's some of it's, I guess, obvious. You know, people use drugs to cope better. And in a way, the more of these risk factors they have, the more likelihood that there is going to be addiction.
Well, if it's not a drug problem, it's a life problem. Seems like it's a lot harder to fix life.
Well, in a way, I think it's maybe it's hard for sure. Yeah. But maybe it's easier because we kind of know what to do at this point. Otherwise, it's just been sort of shots in the dark. And the whole point here is that, you know, if we can recognize, if we pay a lot of attention to a different kind of attention to kids growing up, you know, kids are the most vulnerable to drug problems because of the developing brain and all this other stuff. So if we can pay attention and help them sort of navigate their childhoods, you know, before problems emerge, and then they get a lot harder to deal with. And so part of there are programs around the country that I found, you know, there's a program that deals with moms when they're unwed, you know, single moms when they're before they even have their children, and they come in there and they help these mothers learn how to be mothers and deal with their problems that might end up becoming, you know, substance problems, anger, things like that. And the results are extraordinary. The drug use among their children is so much less. I mean, it shows that if we intervene early, we can have a huge impact.
You wrote that your mother always said that you, David Sheff, would never use drugs. And even as she was saying that, you were stoned throughout high school. So clearly sometimes parents don't know what's going on.
That's true.
What do you think? How do you think your experience with drugs colored how you dealt with your son, Nick, when he began to encounter these issues?
Well, one thing is a lot of people felt, of my generation especially, I'm 57, and you know, we grew up in a generation that really sort of was the first one not only to use drugs but almost to celebrate them. And so I wasn't naive in any way. My parents were teetotalers. I mean, they didn't really get it. I understood the seduction and, you know, the social thing around drugs. But at the same time, I also was aware. Nobody had to sort of convince me that there is a dangerous side to this whole thing. I had some of my friends, and including my college roommate, became addicted, and he ended up overdosing and dying. So as a parent, I was, you know, there was sort of these two mixed things going on. One of them is this assumption in our culture, you know, drugs are out there, kids are going to experiment, and, you know, the rite of passage, all this kind of stuff. And on the other hand, a real fear and a real sense of the dangers that, you know, that ended up, you know, my son, you know, before it was over, he almost died many times. He was arrested. He broke into our house. He almost had his arm amputated because it got infected. And you know, I was one of the families, just like probably many of us, and maybe even most of us, most parents out there, think that it can never happen to us, and it can. It certainly happened to me.
And you've, I've heard you interviewed about this before. Nick's apparently doing quite well. He's been clean for about 6 years now, and things are pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, 5 years is a miracle, especially since I didn't think he was going to make it to, you know, to be 2021. Yeah. And now he just turned 30 this summer. And, you know, it's so great to have my son back. And he's not just back, he's kind of better than ever. He's just an extraordinary person. He's my daughter, who's 16. I mean, there was a time that this was unthinkable, but she just actually has spring break this week, and she got in a plane this morning to L.A. where he lives, and she's hanging out with him for a few days.
What a great thing to happen to your family.
It's amazing. People, I mean, the encouraging thing is that, you know, people who think it's hopeless, and many people do, they feel it. It isn't. And we are testament to that.
Well, in this new book, Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy, you draw on a lot of research you've done as a reporter and somewhat on your personal experience, too. And you ask, why are we so inept at treating drug abuse and addiction? Well, first of all, why do you conclude we are inept? What are the reasons for assuming that?
Well, we are inept. There are 20 million addicts in America. Only 1 out of 10 of them even get into treatment at all. And of those, the amount of people who actually are successfully treated is really low. And it's because we have a system that is based on this flaw, that this archaic idea that addiction is a moral problem. You know, it's a choice. And people who become addicted have to therefore in some ways repent. And you know, it's about contrition, and it's about prayer and asking for forgiveness.
Have those attitudes seeped into a lot of drug treatment programs?
I was going to say that 95% of the treatment programs are based on that, and that's a problem. It's certainly not, you know, prayer and spirituality and things like that really can help a lot of people get well and sober, and they have. But and it can help comfort other people, but it does not treat this disease for many, many people, especially when you take into consideration that, you know, this is a brain disease. It is accompanied often by mental illnesses. You know, you can't wish those things away. And so we need it. Addiction is a disease. People are finally getting that slowly. There's still a lot of resistance to that idea, but it is a disease. And we know what to do when you treat diseases. You know, you go to a doctor, you go through tests, you are assessed, and then a treatment plan is devised. And that's what we need in this world, and that's not what we have right now. You know, when Nick became addicted, the only way I ended up finding him treatment was by, you know, finding another parent who was a friend of a friend of a friend who'd been through something like this, and that's not the way to do it.
Well, you write, you found the treatment programs, but they were kind of hidden in these little-known corners. With so many people having this problem, it sounds like why wouldn't the effective programs be well known?
Because things are slow to change. This other the current system is entrenched. There are a lot of rehabs out there. If you go online, you get overwhelmed, and many of them claim, you know, we have, you know, give us your kid and we'll send them back in 28 days, you know, drug free and clean. And you know, there's no monitoring and there's no licensing in many cases. In many, some states, you know, I could go without any credentials whatsoever and open up a rehab. But over the course of my research, I found out that, you know, we know a lot. And so there's all this resistance. There's not a lot of money for treatment research, which is where, you know, which is where some of this new stuff is coming from. I mean, there's great breakthroughs in behavioral treatments and in medication. But it's really hard to access them right now, access them. And it's going to get easier because one of the things that's happening is one of the really incredible sort of movements forward is that in the Affordable Health Care Act, it will be required that insurance companies will treat addiction and other mental illnesses at the same level as they treat other diseases. When that happens, the insurance companies are going to demand results. And so they're going to go to programs that use evidence-based treatment and not this sort of pseudoscience, traditional ways of treating this disease.
You talked to addiction researchers, and they told you addiction medicine is 40 years behind where it should and could be. Why?
It is because we have been operating out of part of it is that addicts have always been viewed as, you know, morally reprehensible, that, you know, how could sane people do the things they do. You know, they're responsible. Addiction is responsible for a lot of the crime in our state. You know, look in prisons, how many people are in prison because of drugs. And so out of that came a treatment system that really was about reproach, and it was about punishment. And it was so it's just pervades so intensely that research, you know, has been really stymied. You know, money, people don't throw money. Certainly the government, you know, the National Institute of Health does not throw money at a problem that many people view as a choice, as a moral problem. You know, we treat diseases. So 40 years ago, when Richard Nixon started the war on drugs and things sort of veered into this, really dramatically into this sense that, you know, this is a criminal problem and we have to fight it as a criminal problem, instead of focusing this for the – if we'd been focusing on this as a, what it is, it's a health problem for the last 40 years, we wouldn't be in the mess we're in.
You know, when you talk about the kind of morality we've overlaid on people who have drug issues and the approach that is not working in many cases, we're, of course, thinking of 12-step programs, and you seem to be fairly ambivalent about 12-step programs because they embody some of the attitudes you've just said have held us back from dealing effectively with drug addiction.
And, you know, it's important, obviously, to acknowledge the fact that, first of all, they've been the only game in town for a long, long time, for since they've been developed, I think it's 70 years ago or whatever, and they've saved countless lives. The problem is that it is a system that is it's rooted so intensely in that, and there have been so few options that many of the rehab programs, the 12 steps themselves are much more fluid. I mean, the guy, Bill Wilson, who devised them, you know, says these are not for everyone, and this is, you know, and there are other ways that people can get well. But a lot of the programs that are based on them say that there is no other way to get well. And so people, especially kids who are very resistant often to this program, are told, you know, if you don't embrace the steps, if you don't practice the steps, if you don't turn your life over to a higher power, then you will relapse and you will die. And it often becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. Kids leave treatment because they can't do it, or they don't want to do it, or they resist it. And they do leave and relapse, and sometimes they're kicked out, and it's unconscionable. I mean, these are people who are ill, and they should be offered the 12 steps and offered a whole range of treatments that actually have proven to work. And the 12 steps are one of them. I mean, it is an evidence-based program. It does work, but it works for a certain number of people, a certain percentage of the population.
David Sheff, the author of Clean, you were telling us that you know, you had a really hard time finding the effective programs, and maybe the Affordable Care Act in the future will make sure that there are more of them. But what advice do you have to someone who's listening to you right now going, well, how do I find the good ones? How can I go out and get the ones that are really going to work?
Well, the sad, really tragic part is that it's really hard. But at least now there's a model to follow. There are psychologists and psychiatrists trained in addiction medicine. It's a new field. Traditionally, people would go through medical school, even psychiatry school, and not even take one class in addiction. That's changing. And so there are online directories how to find a doctor where you live who has been trained in addiction medicine, who understands this stuff. You go in for an assessment, get some sense, you know, is there a problem? If it's a mild problem, is there a brief intervention that we can use? Or if somebody needs treatment, at least you're in the hands of somebody who can help you figure out what you need and hopefully can help you find it.
Here in Washington State and Colorado, we just passed legalization of marijuana, and there are some concerns about how that might affect young people and their use of marijuana and where that might lead to. What are your thoughts on legalization as a strategy to try to pull people adversely affected by drugs into a treatment system rather than being treated as criminals?
Yeah. Well, you guys are on the vanguard as far as I'm concerned. I mean, I think this is a change that needs to happen, and I believe it will happen. But I actually am very careful about saying I do support legalization because I look at this as a health problem, as I've said. But at the same time, I think people who support legalization who say, you know, marijuana is safe, it's natural, it doesn't hurt anybody, just don't know the facts, because children whose brains are developing, there's just so much research that shows that it has a real impact on kids. So I hope that Washington and anywhere else that makes this switch really recognizes the fact that this is a health problem. And so it's not just a free-for-all. There are regulations and really, maybe even more important, is an intensive prevention campaign to try to keep – I mean, I don't care if an adult, you know, wants to get stoned after work or whatever, but I do care if kids – I mean, kids who are smoking pot every day, they're going to have – there's a lot of evidence that they're going to have cognitive problems, memory problems. There's about 10% of them, or 7 or 8% of them, will become addicted, and that is, you know, people think marijuana is not addictive. It is addictive for a small percentage of the population.
You know, as I said at the top, so many people are in prisons because of alcohol and drug problems. We've had a couple of cases here in recent days where people suspected of being drunk, driving, killed people. And talk about the moral approbation that they receive simply for being alcoholics. Add on that a criminal charge. But we've talked to folks about greater, stiffer penalties for people, put them in jail sooner if they're drinking and driving. But it made me think about people who are alcoholics, and they're not really getting the treatment they need in incarceration, are they? I mean, drug and alcohol treatment programs in prison?
Very few. Yeah. And the point about this is that, of course, it's a disaster. We all know that, you know, how the impact of alcohol on driving. So the way we need to deal with this, I think, is to recognize that this is a progressive problem and take it very seriously, not when it gets to be a problem that actually leads to criminality or, God forbid, an accident, a fatal accident, but right at the beginning, and use every way to intervene that we can so that it never becomes a problem. And it's possible to stop it, to prevent this from escalating, but we wait and we wait and we wait, and people are hiding because there's this shame and we don't talk about it. There's this assumption that, you know, kids are going to drink and colleges, you know, everybody's going to get wasted and, you know, binge drink and all that kind of stuff. And it's a wrong assumption because it does lead to these, you know, deaths that are preventable.
David and Clean, some of the stuff you wrote kind of really jumped out at me. You write that we can now effectively prevent drug abuse and we can effectively treat addiction. What do you mean by effectively? 50% plus one? There's a little qualifier.
Well, there's a qualifier because this is new. It's a new. We're just figuring it out. So right now, we're not going to go out there and prevent all drug use, and we're not going to treat all addicts. But if we start to rely on the evidence, on the treatments that we know that work, and the prevention methods that we know work, we will start to reverse the trend. So, you know, right now, 80% of kids are going to use something before they're 18. We have 20 million addicts, and 350 people are dying every day. And those numbers will start to go down as we treat this, you know, as a crisis, a medical crisis, a health crisis.
Is this the cause of your life now?
It is, and I never imagined that it would be. I was, you know, working on. I'm a journalist, as you said, and doing all kinds of other things. And then when this hit us, when it hit my family, I not only was it just a 10-year it was just so hard to try to save Nick's life, but thank God, you know, he's doing great, as I said. But we're the only reason that he's alive is that we're lucky, and this shouldn't be about luck. And so suddenly, you know, I had planned to go back to my other work, but this is too big of a problem. I just can't let this go. There's too many people suffering, and I it's heartbreaking.
David Scheff, thank you so much for coming by. We really appreciate you taking the time.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
David Scheff's new book called Clean, Overcoming Addiction and Ending America's Greatest Tragedy.